playing. It's so insulting. It's like playing with a 2-year-old child. Yes.
Okay, here we are. Happy Monday. Erica and I are back on our early hour of the 3 hours a week we do on general issues of health and survival, not to mention worldwide genocide. That's the big ticket item, and that's happening. You may not see it in the paper. You may not see it in the alt media, unless you look at our page, your page. But it's happening. People are dying like flies. They're dying of literally dozens of different disorders, diseases, syndromes, all being brought about because the spike protein has destroyed and is destroying their immune systems. They have AIDS. You can't live without an immune system. And that's how they're hiding this massive slaughter. It's really quite ingenious, and they planned it for 2 decades minimum. So there you go. Erica, welcome back. How are you?
Hi, Jeff. Good to be back. Happy Monday.
What have you been doing today? Having fun?
Oh, a little of this, a little of that. You know, trying to keep up with the game.
The big game. It's a game, all right. Here's a quickie for you who do follow the alt news world. There is a talk show, you know, I guess you'd call it a show. Romola D. Some of you have seen Romola's work. I think we posted maybe a piece or two here over the months. Christian Northrup wrote this today. It's one paragraph. Let me just read this, and I'll read a little bit more. Romola D., an incredible investigative journalist, is being held in the psych ward at Kearney, C-A-R-N-E-Y, like Carnival, hospital in Dorchester. Apparently, a neighbor of Romola's reported her, and the police picked her up. And that's all we got from Northrup, but it goes on from there. Last Thursday, Romola was picked up by government authorities, unidentified. I don't know who, local cops, government, I don't know, feds. Government authorities and placed on a 72-hour psych hold stemming from a baseless neighbor's complaint. A baseless complaint from a neighbor. Clearly, we see what the agenda is, as the power structure appears to be using the neighbor where there has been some kind of history between the two of them. Romola is requesting for the community to get loud and share this information as far and wide as she can. Due to the timing of her detainment, she is being informed, now get this one, that she cannot expect to be released. This is a 72-hour hold until next Tuesday or Wednesday at the earliest. Why? Because weekends don't count as part of a 72-hour psych eval hold. So they're going to hang on to her until next Tuesday or Wednesday. Wonder what they'll do to her. We can hope nothing. But yeah, this kind of a game can be played to begin to declare alt news researchers as being mentally ill. Did the neighbor get paid off? Who knows? I'll bet you, though, when Romola gets out, she's going to be moving. I would. Any comment on this, Erica?
This is shocking. You know, I've seen several of Romola's presentations on her website. She has a BitChute channel, I think probably a couple of others.
We've watched
everything
them.
I've seen of Romola is top notch. She's neutral, a very good interviewer. This is astonishing.
Yeah. Well, they went after somebody who's not a flake, which is more of a concern. But it kind of tells you the game is being played according to their rules. Now, this, I don't believe for a moment this is a coincidence. I don't believe this was fully, personally, I don't believe this is fully predicated on some neighbor making a complaint. Unless there are circumstances, and there may be, that I have no knowledge of, none. Maybe she gets out at midnight and runs around the house banging on a pot with a spoon. I don't know. But if they're predicating this on her work, it's as wrong as it gets. So there you go.
I agree. And, you know, she doesn't look like a pushy or opinionated person.
No.
She's got a very, gentle demeanor to her. This is shocking.
She's very sincere. And we have to watch this very carefully. And in the email, it does mention she is being detained, as I said, at Kearney Hospital, appropriately named, in Massachusetts. And there's a phone number there, and it says above that, know that she is able to receive messages, even though they are not allowing her to use the phone. So she is in the hospital, and she'll be there until next Wednesday. I hope they don't give her any drugs or whatever. We know that if you're picked up by the government, you've got no rights. So hold a good thought for that woman. And let's hope she gets out intact.
Yeah.
Okay. Back to the great toilet caper. Oh, excuse me. The great municipal water caper, which comes right into your house. And the idea that if you look real carefully and if it looks yellowish to you, it's probably king cobra venom. At least that was one of the proofs offered. Wasn't that a proof offered?
Yeah, that was a conjecture.
All right. I put up 5 stories for you, for those of you who are real honest truth seekers and want to do a little bit of real simple research. They're in headlines, and they're in the archive for the Spike over on the right. You know where they are. The first one is Dr. Pierre Corey. He spent 2 hours dissecting the conversation that was held between Dr. Brian Artis and Stu Peters. Dr. Corey's remarks are up there, his analysis. They're very telling. And then I've rerun our program of last Friday. I think that's a very good summation. You can listen to that again if you haven't. Pass it around. Then there are several other items. Let me go real quick to Dr. Corey, and I'm going to read just a little bit of his piece on this. Tell us who Dr. Corey is real quickly, would you?
Dr. Corey is most well known for his advocacy of using early treatment for cases of COVID, not having somebody come to the hospital and tell them to go home until they can't breathe. You know, get them on early treatment right away, and that early treatment might consist of ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine or some combination thereof. And he founded the Frontline Critical Care Alliance, which is a similar organization to America's Frontline Doctors. But he's been very outspoken on behalf of the patient population being treated for COVID. So if anyone's prepared to speak on this, he would be one person for sure.
Correct. Yeah. All right. He did take a real good look at Watch the Water and wrote up a paper entitled Snake Venom and COVID-19. Here is my take, he writes. I'm just going to touch on the beginning and the end. I want to start off by stating my embarrassment that I have devoted a couple of hours of my life assessing the snake venom hypothesis. Similar to many of my colleagues here, here, and here, who I suspect spent less time than I did, which is why I'm embarrassed, but I might as well share the fruits, fruits, of my time spent assessing the Watch the Water documentary, lest it go to waste. First off, I have never met Dr. Brian Artis and know little of his previous and, from what I have heard, credible work in calling attention to one of the most fraudulent and corrupt sagas in U.S. public health history, that of our agencies, ensuring that the completely ineffective, somewhat toxic, and outrageously profitable, underlined, remdesivir, be infused into almost every arm of every hospitalized American patient with COVID for almost 2 years now. Okay? So that's how he starts out, and I'm going to jump to the end and let you read it, because it's very well done and raises an awful lot of questions. He writes at the end, which one shall I read here? To be fair as possible, I can identify with making incorrect theories and arguments in medicine from my experiences with complex cases of life-threatening illness where I was the doctor in charge and did not know what was wrong with my deteriorating patient. Critical care medicine can be wickedly stressful at times. I would think and think, considering diagnosis after diagnosis, assessing whether the constellation of symptoms and findings I was witnessing could match what I knew of the multiple diagnoses I was considering, and at times I would Google Scholar the constellation of symptoms or the most impactful one, and then I would try to fit the diagnosis to my patient, and in some instances I would venture too far down a specific diagnostic pathway by ignoring data or evidence which didn't fit, only to find that I was completely wrong with my diagnosis. I get it. It happens. And is what happened here, in my opinion, albeit way further down an erroneous diagnostic pathway than I have ever heard or seen broadcast for that matter. In summary, unfortunately, or fortunately, this is all the time I can devote to the above ranting of a truth, partial truths, and irrelevancies littered with blatant untruths, inaccuracies, and ignorances. I wish I could get these 2 hours of my life back. P.S. Although not my favorite post, I got some really good ones coming up, so I just want to say how much I appreciate all the subscribers to my Substack, etc., etc. So he really takes it apart, and Pierre Corey is a man who is above reproach, period. Read it, enjoy it, and learn from it. He's a good one.
And he's got, four links to, you know, other medical professionals who chimed in with their opinions. It was disturbing to have to address such a baseless speculation and conjecture.
How about homemade?
Yeah, it was insulting. You're trying to make progress with legitimate research, and there's somebody practically with a bullhorn, shouting about things he can't prove. I mean, things that is just fantastical.
Now,
and it's rather bold and cavalier of him to come forward with really no proof, nothing but conjecture.
And
circumstantial evidence that
totally.
You know, if you really look at it, it doesn't make sense. And I can't even imagine the number of public water supply managers or departments that were inundated with phone calls this week.
Thousands
as a result
of
this announcement.
You bet. Coast to coast. Every town, every little village that has a municipal water supply, everyone, they all got called. Probably. Now, Pierre Corey is first. Take a listen to our program from Friday. I think it's honest. It's forthright. We don't mince words. And it says a lot of things that should be said. Then we have a paper that's really important. This is from 2017. And I've posted that. I got it from America. It shows how phospholipase A2, snake venom, is native to the human body and naturally elevated during infection. How phospholipase A2, otherwise known as snake venom, is native to the human body. That means if you get sick, you're going to generate a certain amount of venom. It's part of your physiology. It's there. Where did you find this paper? And tell us a little bit more.
I have to give credit to Dr. Syed Mobeen, who gives for free medical lectures on YouTube. It was a paper that he dug up to show that this is accepted knowledge in physiology, that we have a certain level of this enzyme present in our body. for various reasons, and it tends to elevate when we have an infection of some sort because it's an enzyme that will destroy pathogens. So it's not uncommon to have elevated levels in the case of a SARS-CoV-2 infection. So it is also a component of various snake venoms. It's not the only thing in snake venom. Yeah.
No, it's a component. It's a sequence,
right,
so to speak. All right? We'll just go ahead.
And then the other one, I mean, this was supposed to be the smoking gun, the proof positive that people are being injected with or drinking snake venom.
An 18.5-foot king cobra may come out and bite you.
So the bottom line in, with regard to this phospholipase A2 is, it has something in common. It is common to various snake venoms, but it's also a native protein or enzyme in the human body. And the other one that was supposedly associated with snake venoms is this metalloproteinase, which is another enzyme the body uses for various processes, but also to combat microbes, foreign microbes. So that should not shock anybody that these levels would be elevated in a sick person.
Yeah, well, this paper's been out for 5 years, and
this is common knowledge in physiology.
I don't recall any of this being mentioned, and I did watch, excuse the pun, I watched the water. We did. And didn't see this in there. Did you?
No, I believe this was in one of the follow-up interviews with Mike Adams, or I think there's been several.
Right. There have been,
I mean, these names were thrown around just out of context. You know, if you really sat down and look at, why are these enzymes present? If you had the knowledge of the physiology, then you wouldn't be making these, you know, wild speculations that they're coming from snake venom.
Okay, and we do understand that snake venom can be apparently synthesized. There's a company that has a huge number of them. I ran that story for 48 hours. It's called Venom Tech, to make sure everyone understood that it's synthetic. They didn't really have to go out and catch 18-foot king cobras and use that venom. They had it. They've got it. Venom has been used for a long time in physiology and various kinds of research, very unique
biological properties that can be exploited for, you know, treatments of various conditions. You could use some form of it for addressing high blood pressure, for addressing coagulation problems, for addressing neurological problems. That's been known for 40 years, and we're at a point now where we're refining it to the point we can synthesize it artificially.
Okay, next I have put up a paper, one of two papers by Italian researchers. The first one, and this is key, Erica was the first one I ever heard mention that the digestive bacteria in your body, all 7+ pounds worth, could be infected by a virus, and in point of fact, the bacteria could then be producing and spewing, right, into your body, proteins, like spike protein. It's right there.
Yep.
So the Italians figured it out. The paper is there for you to read. It says, showing bacteria from critically ill COVID patients replicate the SARS-CoV-2 virus, producing toxic venomous, in quotes, peptides, May 2021. Remember, when the body gets sick, these venom-like properties will become elevated, naturally. It's not an unnatural thing. Doesn't come out of your tap. The second paper from the Italian researchers, same group, and we understand that there may be more coming, showing 31 bacterially generated toxic venomous peptides in the blood and body fluids of critically ill COVID patients. So their second paper showed 31 bacterially generated toxic venomous peptides in the blood and body fluids of critically ill COVID patients. That paper came out in July of 2021.
Yep. And they're continuing with their research. This paper I didn't realize it was criticized by a particular reviewer for not having a sufficient control group. In other words, okay, we found these venomous peptides in the blood and body fluids of critically ill COVID patients, but could they also be present in the blood and body fluids of people who are sick with other viruses? Or is this something
illnesses
that's unique to SARS-CoV-2? And then the other possibility was, well, maybe these venomous peptides are the result of medications these people are being given. So those things have to be investigated, but I think, you know, the basic hypothesis is there, and there's, you know, reason to think that yeah, it deserves some attention. These Italians maintain that more than a viral infection, this thing is more of a bacterial toxemia. So, in other words, your cells aren't just getting infected with a virus. Your bacteria are being infected by a virus and producing some very, very noxious peptides and proteins that could kill you.
Exactly. Okay.
So, and that may, if we go back to the beginning with Lev Zelenko, with his Z-Pak, it did include azithromycin, which is an antibiotic. So it had the HCQ, hydroxychloroquine, to address the virus that was infecting people's cells, and then an antibiotic, presumably to address the bacterial component of this infection.
Okay. Now, let me, there are a number of things here to read. Okay, I've got the fourth one. The handbook, which I call the handbook, that has magically vanished from my screen. Do you remember where that was? It did. It happened all the time.
We had it over on the left-hand side. Because I think we mentioned it on Friday.
So
modifying the human microbiome.
Okay, let me find it here. I've got it. This is a very important one. This comes out of a handbook that virtually nobody knows about. I call it a handbook. It's really a big research report, very lengthy. So let me go down and find it here. Okay. I did find it earlier, didn't I?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, I've got it. Here it is. Okay, good. All right. Modifying the human microbiome. All right, tell everyone what their microbiome is. We want to make sure everybody understands.
Okay, so we as humans are colonized by many different species of bacteria and some viruses and some fungi as part of our what we call a microbiome. These are living species that when we're in health, they will help us stay healthy. They provide a barrier, and they produce antimicrobial compounds that prevent the invasion of pathogenic microbes. And even some of these viruses can keep other viruses at bay. So it's we can't overlook this part of us that we're mostly unaware of.
Yeah. We can't
but
live
that
without,
are essential.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Essential.
If you wipe out all your bacteria, and this includes what's living inside your digestive bacteria or your digestive system, there's 7 pounds on average of bacteria, various species, that help you digest your food. They help you synthesize nutrients, and they create a protective barrier against opportunistic or other pathogenic organisms. And then you have another set of bacteria that live in the oral or sinus cavity.
Sure.
Another set that live on your skin.
Now, what's really important about this is, and we've said this before, but the digestive bacteria in your body can be infected by the SARS-CoV-2 virus. Now, people until recently didn't think that was possible. But it is.
Yeah, it's unusual, but it's been shown that they, at least in vitro, these Italians showed unequivocally that yes, it does. It does replicate, infect and replicate, and in the process of doing so, it causes the bacteria to produce the these very noxious, toxic, venomous-like peptides that are biologically active. So once they're produced, they can enter the bloodstream, circulate, and act like a snake venom.
Well,
you know, they can poison
got
the blood. They can affect the neurological system.
Spike protein as well.
Yeah, possibly.
We don't know. It's
well, if they're reproducing or replicating the virus in its entirety, then yeah.
Then they would.
They were able to show that at least the RNA, the genetic material for the virus, is replicating.
Okay. Let me read this here. Modifying the human microbiome. Human health is highly dependent upon the human microbiome, the microorganisms that live on and within all of us, especially those associated with the digestive tract, the oral cavity, nasopharyngeal spaces, and the skin. The bacteria on your skin is part of your microbiome. These populations of microbes are likely far easier to manipulate than the human host itself, making the microbiome a potentially accessible vector for attack. The human microbiome is the focus of a great deal of academic and commercial research, and microbiome manipulation of the microbiome is an area that is rapidly developing, as also discussed in Chapter 5 of this report. Several possible ways the microbiome could be manipulated to cause harm were considered. These possibilities were analyzed in aggregate to determine the level of concern warranted. In other words, they were worried about it. How much worry should we put in this? Second paragraph, delivery of harmful cargo via the microbiome. As discussed in Chapter 5, the engineering of microorganisms to produce hazardous chemicals or biochemicals, including toxins, poses a medium to high level of concern and the potential for making chemicals or biochemicals in situ via the microbiome warrants a high level of concern. Second time we've seen that. The microbiome could be used as a vector for other types of harmful cargoes as well. For example, microbes could be modified to produce functional small RNAs, in other words, microRNAs, that could be transferred to the host via the gut or skin microbiome to cause a variety of health impacts. Microbes also could potentially be engineered, now listen to this, to horizontally transfer a genetic cargo to the native microbiome to, for example, cause a host's own well-established microbes, to produce a harmful biochemical. I got to read that again. Microbes also could potentially be engineered to horizontally transfer a genetic cargo to the native microbiome to, for example, cause a host's own well-established microbes to produce a harmful biochemical. Sounds like war to me. In such a scenario, the harmful agent would be manufactured by organisms in the established microbiome, so the engineered microbe would need to infiltrate and persist within the microbiome only long enough to transfer its cargo to a sufficient number of native microbes. Thus, this approach would circumvent the challenges associated with establishing engineered microbes in otherwise occupied niches. There are many known instances of natural horizontal transfer events that result in the production of toxins. It may be possible to harm a population by enhancing the spread of vectors or phage, viruses targeting bacteria, carrying such genetic cargoes. See, what they're saying here is that bacteria can be engineered to carry genetic cargoes that can do great damage to people and entire populations, maybe entire species. Synthetic biology methods could advance such a capability. For example, through the engineering of toxin, antitoxin couples that would help ensure retention of plasmids. It's a little heavy here, but hang on. It is also conceivable that microbes could one day be engineered to horizontally transfer genes directly to human cells. So you pick up a bacteria, a microbe, it goes into your body, or a bunch do, and they start transferring engineered designer genes directly into your cells. Does that sound sort of familiar somehow? Yes.
I think at the very least, this is a good description of what's happening. If, in fact, as the Italians have put out there, that the microbiome in the digestive tract is becoming infected with the virus and then producing venomous peptides in response to that, no one's looking there. Really, I mean, who would think that their own microbiome would be producing something that could kill them over a period of time?
Oh, it's imponderable for most people. It just doesn't.
I mean,
because
everybody is really focused on the virus and then you know the damage that the virus does, or the spike protein, but they're not considering the impact on the microbiome, which might be the more insidious part of this and the longer, far-reaching part of it.
I agree. Okay. We've got some other things here. The Morgellons. Why don't you go ahead and read that one?
Okay.
Can you find it?
Yeah. Yep. Got it right here. Okay. This is somebody that recently, she believes she has Morgellons. I'm not so sure, but this is her story. I wanted to share my story of how I got here and my three possible theories. It probably will sound insane, but oh well. So my husband got the vax. I did not. 3 weeks post his second Pfizer jab, we were intimate. 2 days later, I woke up with the most intense burning sensation in the back of my head, a fever, and I could not get up. The feeling lasted for weeks. As it was summer here, then we were all in our pool, all vaxxed people and me and my unvaxxed kids. We also have a vine that runs along our pool and lots of birds. One day the burning started in my groin, then my armpits, and then my face. On January 13th, three planes went over at the same time, streaming trails. The crawling sensation started in my head, then slowly spread to my face. I went to the doctor, was told that I have hay fever. I went to the hospital and basically told I was making it up and making my children believe me too. I called an ambulance, was also told there was nothing wrong with me. Now I have a referral for a dermatologist for a skin biopsy. I think the worst part of this is the dismissal, the not being believed and not being able to get help. I'm sure this is very common in those that suffer. All I'm hoping for is answers and recovery in some form. It still blows my mind that I was living a normal, happy life, as I'm sure you all were too. And now this. So
these are very treacherous times, and it's very difficult to keep them all accessible and in some kind of order. It's like we're being attacked constantly with new variations on ways that we're being harmed or could be harmed by any number of things. This comes from the kill shot, from the bioweapon. The most evil thing ever.
Yeah, I don't think it's... if there's vax people in the swimming pool, who knows? But the most likely source of her problems was her husband.
Of course. Or the pool boy. I couldn't resist. All right, we got to laugh a little bit here. This is all grim stuff. It's difficult. The other story today was that a federal judge has turned upside down and tossed out the national mandate to wear masks in mass public transit. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, this is going to be interesting. There's already quite a bit of tension on flights nowadays, with people being casual with the mask wearing and then getting into it with people that, believe that everybody should be wearing a mask and whatever. People have their opinions on the value of a mask. So there's quite a bit of tension already. And now I suspect it's going to get worse because there's going to be you know, half the population that wants the mask mandate in those situations. And I have to agree, you know, you're in very close quarters with 200, 300 people in this, you know, stuffy cabin. And even though they do recirculate the air, I mean, there's no question that, you know, when you're sandwiched in between two people that are breathing on you, you're going to be exposed to whatever they're exhaling. But given that there's tension already, I can see that the rage and violent outbursts are probably going to reach peak levels. Either that or the people that are afraid just won't fly.
I think a lot of that is already going on. We'll get to that a little later. Okay, we have a couple of Novavax notes. CJD, I think I can speak for Erica. We're watching this very closely. It's not a good thing, and it shows a lot of indications that it's going to be an explosive item already. And is not being seen yet, not being acknowledged yet by organized medicine, but it certainly should be. We're watching. Okay. Now, there's another one here. Novavax and Medicago. You want to do that next?
Yeah.
What do you want to do?
All right. So, this is a Novavax adverse event. Now, the Medicago is I don't believe that's in distribution yet. That's the one that's manufactured in plants, and it's just virus particles of the SARS-CoV-2 virus. But for some reason, Canada has delayed distributing
that. But wait, there are no such things as viruses,
right? Right. Well, these are virus-like particles.
I see. Okay. All right. Go ahead.
Okay, this is someone who is reporting her adverse event in one of the social media groups. It's been 1 week since I had my Nova booster. I had Pfizer for dose 1 and 2 and had some minor complications with my heart.
Whoa.
I am still suffering. Are there any such thing as minor complications with a heart?
Oh.
I am still suffering side effects from the Novavax. Luckily, not heart-related, but I'm still suffering from headaches, nausea, hot and cold sweats, loss of vision. I never needed to wear my glasses every day. Now I do. And my stomach has been funky, feeling like it's a digestive issue, but I can't pinpoint it. Now, the responses to this are rather interesting.
Yeah. Go ahead.
You want to take
that? Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's the next one. That's the long string.
Yeah.
I'll take part of these. This is from someone named Tracy. All right. Following, she writes. I don't know what does following mean?
She's going to follow the thread. She's going to follow
okay.
the conversation.
Following the statement. All right, I got it. I don't do social media. I've never even been to Facebook. Never. Following, okay. I had heart inflammation from my first one, M?
Moderna.
Okay, from Moderna, first one. I was told not to get anything else, but I'm on the fence, or at least considering Novavax, because people think that's the safer one. So I'm interested in how yours goes. I wouldn't say my heart inflammation was minor complications from the first Moderna. I feel like it was serious and lasted strongly for, sit down folks, 10 months. 10 months! And she's on the fence considering another shot? Another shot of Novavax, which is composed almost entirely? I don't even want to say it. It's crazy.
Yeah.
How can it be that the whole damn Novavax thing is spike protein? They've got an adjuvant in there and a couple other little things.
Right, but Matrix M, which is toxic. Matrix M is toxic.
It's another toxin. So you got two deadly toxins in Novavax. Deadly. She says, I was told not to get another shot after having the first Moderna, but I'm on the fence, or at least considering Novavax. So I'm interested in how yours goes. I'm rereading this. I wouldn't say my heart inflammation was minor complications from the first Moderna. I feel like it was serious, and it lasted strongly for 10 months. This lady's lucky to be alive.
Mm-hmm.
Someone writes a response. Have you recovered from the heart inflammation? Was it myocarditis or pericarditis? And she says, yes, both. Recovery didn't start until 10 months and took a couple of months of milder symptoms that sometimes were off and on. I am now symptom-free for several months. My cardiologist believes, my cardiologists believe I will likely experience flare-ups of the inflammation again over time. These are heart flare-ups. This is big time stuff. Go ahead.
Okay, and the first person or second person again says, I am so sorry you went through that. Does this mean that you'll be more at risk of heart attacks or heart failure in the future? Or you're just at risk for flare-ups of inflammation / symptoms? In response
and Tracy
to that,
says,
she's,
Go ahead. No, you.
She answers, I have a residual arrhythmia now that the doctor feels will worsen and need addressed as I age. At this point, I am medicine free. If I'm frank, I'm very happy just to be here now. I have kids, so I'm happy to at least be here for them longer.
Tracy, God bless you, and I hope you are around for a long time for your kids. We see these stories all the time. Erica watches the social media posting sites all the time. These things are happening everywhere. And for every one you see, there might be 99.9% that aren't shown, that never get shown, never get read. We don't know.
This is a staggering number. Staggering.
Yeah. The final comment comes back. Go ahead.
This is her continuing. The long answer short is that, yes, I am at further risk now than prior to Moderna for future heart problems. My cardiologist is amazing. He and I agree we will address those as they arrive. I'm grateful for each and every day I get now, and I will work through future issues as they evolve. I say if they arise. My cardiologist says when they arise. I guess I'm more hopeful, and he's likely smarter.
The human suffering is on a scale that is unprecedented in recorded human history. This, and I'm told by other people that these same things are happening all around the world, wherever the vax, the bioweapon, was used to any significant degree at all among the populace. They're all suffering from a wide range, a panoply of things that are just awful. And she's Tracy, if you're listening, don't be on the fence about getting any more of this crap. Stop.
There's virtually no protection from it. I mean, that has come out, that these antibodies, what did I read today? Those who have survived to have four doses do generate copious amounts of antibodies, many, many times the initial level, but they're not protective. So why are you doing it?
I don't know. I don't get it. All right, we have another CJD thing here. Let's see. I do want to read one from our listeners here, but let's go through this real quick here. This is from a physician. I was asked to consult with the family of a patient who was hospitalized, and the neurological team had concluded that she had CJD, that's mad cow disease, prion disease, after eliminating stroke seizure as a possible diagnosis. The woman is in her early 70s, who had been active and mentally sharp, who nosedived after a brief mild illness. Prior to that, she had been vaxxed and boosted. Interesting note is that a family member reported bringing her IVM for three. What's IVM?
Ivermectin.
Okay. Reported bringing her ivermectin for 3 days. I would have figured that out sooner or later. For 3 days in the hospital. and the patient woke up and became conversational when she was semi-conscious for days prior, and then relapsed afterwards. Neurology discharged her to hospice, and she passed away shortly afterward. Autopsy confirmed prions in her brain, so CJD was the correct diagnosis. Lingering questions for me, this is a doctor, are these. Did the patient arouse because her family member gave her ivermectin? Did she develop prion disease because of the spike protein in her vaccine or possible mild acute COVID? I was previously unaware of Dr. Richard Fleming's explanation of the connection between the spike protein and prions. Go ahead and finish it.
Let's see here. If the family had taken the patient out of the hospital and we initiated treatment with medications we use for long haul and vaccine injury, would she have been able to recover? Has anyone else encountered a similar situation? I note that the Children's Health Defense had a recent posting indicating reports of 17 vaccinated females ages 60 to 70 diagnosed with prion disease.
Keep this in mind, dear friends, and remember all those horrible movies about, we'll leave it at that. I don't want to go there. I don't like to give Hollywood credit. This came in from a listener to the program, and we were asking questions about people not being as visible on the streets in terms of cars, walking, and so forth. And he wrote this nice response. Well, you remember all the zombie movies, okay? When you think CJD, think 4 weeks from diagnosis to death, and after a couple of weeks, or even a week, or maybe before that, you're not going to be yourself. You'll end up walking around, staring off into nowhere, perfect zombie profile. And a lot of people think that that was predictive programming. All those zombie movies going back 10 plus years were put out there to get people used to the idea that we're going to be seeing people who are no longer mentally fit, mentally able, or mentally competent. And that's the truth. All right. Hello, Mr. Rents. After listening to your segment titled Snake Venom in Your Tap Water, I noticed you had asked the listeners to write to you about the sudden rapid decrease in the vaxxed mainly. In the vaxxed. Here is my observance on how this kill shot is affecting people who sadly accepted it. I have seen in the last 2 months a major decrease in traffic where there is supposed to be bumper-to-bumper traffic, and this has been occurring more frequently. I am in the Southern California, Orange County area. At my current place of employment, those who proudly admitted that they were vaccinated are now falling ill all the time and calling in sick. One of my coworkers, who proudly admitted that they got vaxxed, stated that they are suddenly feeling strange and becoming ill out of nowhere, and that they have never had this problem before. What is even worse for me is my family, which most are in the medical field, have been brainwashed and are now vaxxed. Two of which are now fully vaxxed and have taken boosters. They are suddenly complaining of feeling strange and having an illness-like feeling that just started. My mother had 3 shots, and when she had the first one, she dropped to the floor unconscious while at home. The doctor stated that it was a lack of nutrients in her diet and nothing else. So sadly, she went ahead and accepted the second shot and then the booster. Now she is having such huge heart problems that may be leading to a heart attack that she is now constantly in the ER. Her best friend's husband passed away a couple of months after taking the jab, and his death was stated as a severe heart failure episode. He died. His heart quit. At this point, I can't say to them what is truly causing these reactions now and bringing on the sickness, because they will turn a deaf ear to my information and tell me that I am spreading fake news and being a conspiracy theorist. It kills me, and I am sure many others, to know that their best friends and loved ones in the family have now allowed themselves to become brainwashed and involved in this grotesque agenda. Now, unfortunately, we have to watch them become severely sick and even worse, possibly die. In conclusion, I must admit, when I first heard of the Deagle report, I didn't really believe it. But now, because of what I am seeing, and now awake to more of what is going on and what this sick and sadistic agenda is, I now truly believe that the evil will complete their goal of population reduction at or around 2025. That is what I am now witnessing at a drastic rate, and it's not getting any better. So all of you out there, look around your towns and see if traffic has diminished, both vehicular traffic, people walking. What have you seen, Erica, the same sort of thing?
Oh, yeah. Yesterday, it was just, I was out driving. It was Easter Sunday, and there was nobody out. No cars, no people, no dogs. I saw nothing, you know, driving through several towns. It was really eerie, really eerie.
Well, what we think is going on is quite simply that a lot of people are suffering the onset of AIDS, and they're picking up a lot of smaller disorders that make them feel not right, not good enough to want to go out, and they're just staying home or calling in sick. They're just not going out because they don't feel well.
I would say you're right. I mean, the side effects of some of these, some people are experiencing, have to do with dizziness. So, you know, they probably don't feel like driving.
Oh,
and then the
goodness.
Nausea. Do you want to sit down for a three-course meal and feeling like you're going to heave?
This is what's going on, dear friends, all over this country and your country, around the world. It's no joke. And I go back to those zombie movies almost every time. And we'll spend more in the future on trying to analyze the CJD risk that we all face, vaxxed and unvaxxed, because of horizontal shedding and transmission. We'll cover that more next time around. Thanks, Erica, very much, as always. Not fun
okay.
news, but we do our best.
Yep. Okay, my pleasure, Jeff. Good night, everyone.
Okay. All right, everybody. We'll be back with Mr. Richard Allgaier coming up next, so stay tuned.